Welcome to ClotCast, the North American Thrombosis Forum's podcast series. This podcast encourages open and ongoing dialogue between healthcare providers and patients by teaching proven communication techniques and empowering patients to be active participants in their care. Today, we're going to talk about improving communication between healthcare providers and patients, and we're going to discuss techniques for clinic and virtual visits. I'm Dr. Neil Skolnick, Associate Director in the Family Medicine Residency Program at Abington Jefferson Health and a Professor of Family and Community Medicine at the Sidney Kimmel Medical College of Thomas Jefferson University. Joining me today, I'm privileged to have Dr. Kimberly Mirza, who is a licensed clinical psychologist. Welcome, Kimberly.
Thank you.
And Brenda Shislak, who is a person who's had to deal with medical issues around thrombosis, who has been kind enough to devote her time as a patient advisor on the North American Thrombosis Forum's Medical Advisory Board, and who has been generous enough to share with us her story and that of a family member's today. Brenda, welcome to our podcast.
Thank you.
You know, the topic of improving communication between healthcare providers and patients is incredibly important because communication is difficult. In fact, George Bernard Shaw over 100 years ago said the single biggest problem in communication is the illusion that it has taken place. I think we all know that. We know that intuitively, and we know that even from discussions we have over the dinner table with family members, people we know well. Even in that setting, communication is challenging, and often the things we say are taken in ways that we don't intend or are not understood at all. And it's even more so in a clinician setting in the medical office. And we're going to talk about both the challenges and also some solutions, and those solutions are available not from either side, but from both the clinician side and the patient side. And to initiate that discussion, Brenda, can I ask you to share your experience and your story?
Probably about 4 or 5 years ago, I had a very simple surgical procedure, which in and itself, I mean, I've had some pretty major procedures. So this was something that completely caught me off guard when I started having 2 days later what felt like a Charlie horse in my leg. And I kept saying, what are the possibilities that this could be a blood clot? Since it, you know, my father did have quite a few, totally not believing it, but also not being crazy and, you know, sending a little note to the primary care, you know, can I have a D-dimer? And him saying it back going, no, but you're having an ultrasound. So, you know, we did that and just having a chat with the tech saying, so you probably get about 90% of these negative. He said, yep, but yours is positive. And I was like, you gotta be kidding me. So that was the journey, and it was more, you know, the treatment, the communication with the primary care, which was a wonderful thing because we clearly understood each other, and that actually helped take care of it and answer questions and help you through that. And in terms of family, I have a daughter that has rare diseases. She has three, as a matter of fact. And we always ran into doctors basically telling us it was psychiatric, that I am harming her because I'm not dealing with reality. When in fact, it was a matter of finding that right doctor who, again, is my primary care, who's now her primary care, to listen to her, listen to her symptoms and tell her it was okay. And it wasn't all in her head, that these things were very physical. And that's where I began being a patient advocate of learning how to communicate with doctors and actually helping the physicians understand the patients.
That's fantastic, Brenda. Thanks for sharing that. And the things that stand out to me when I hear your story is, one, how subtle your initial presentation was. You said it felt like a Charlie horse, but you were smart enough to identify the potential problem. And that must have been very scary with the family experience that your dad had. But you talked to a clinician who did the second thing you talked about, who listened and who heard your concerns and who acted on it, ordering that ultrasound. And I think patient fear, I think listening to our patients is an important thing that we'll come back to. And finally, as you discuss your daughter, I'm struck and afraid that it might not be unusual that clinicians discount the concerns of their patients. How did it feel to you when the doctor that you presented concerns about your daughter to really said it was psychiatric.
Well, this was a doctor that I actually trusted because this doctor helped me. And that's why I brought my daughter to this doctor. And it really kind of hurt to think that she's telling me that this is all psychiatric, which then had me questioning, was I letting my daughter walk all over me? Was I really missing this? Was it because it was so personal to me that I wasn't really seeing the big picture? And it was the primary care that I brought her to that literally said, this happens to young women, that if we can't figure it out, if it's not obvious, then it's your fault. It's in your head. And that's where it all comes from. And he said, but it's not. And it's real. And we're going to figure it out.
You're listening to ClotCast, the North American Thrombosis Forum's podcast series. Now let's get back to the conversation on improving communication between healthcare providers and patients, proven techniques for virtual and clinic visits. I want to pivot now and bring Kimberly in, who has a lot of experience with doctor-patient communication. Kim, what are your thoughts on listening?
Yeah, Neil. Well, a central theme that I'm seeing in Brenda's interactions are that Brenda came to these interactions as a patient who was engaged and prepared and offering information that could be useful for diagnosis and treatment. In some cases, in one part of her story, that information was attended to and it got her the right treatment outcome. And in other cases, in the case of the experience with her daughter, she was disregarded. And as a result of that, Brenda left those interactions feeling frustrated, feeling confused, feeling disempowered. And I think a lot of us, unfortunately, can relate to some aspect of Brenda's experiences. And as a person, as a psychologist who does work in behavioral medicine and often serves as a liaison between doctors and patients, unfortunately, I do see this regularly.
Now, it seems that when we talk about communication, it's never one-sided. Communication is a two-way street. Kim, can you talk a little bit about what we as clinicians can do to facilitate communication? I'm going to ask you to address that first, and then what patients can do to facilitate communication, to be their own advocates, which it sounds like Brenda did a fantastic job of, but we could all learn from having that the lessons be more explicit. So let's start with what should we as clinicians do in order to facilitate communication?
Yeah, these are excellent questions, Neil. And I'm glad I really like the way that you framed this problem, which is what can patients do and what can providers do? Because the number one tip that I give to both sides is to engage with the other party in a way that's collaborative. So to start with providers, an essential tip is to avoid interrupting the patient. Let them fully describe their symptoms and their presenting complaint. And when I give this tip, oftentimes providers push back a little. They say, well, gosh, if I let the patient talk without interrupting, I'm afraid it would take too long. It would eat up too much time of the visit and we wouldn't use the time wisely. And actually, there's some research that refutes that. And so there was a study that was done that allowed patients to describe their presenting complaint without interruption. And the researchers timed how long it took the patient to describe the presenting complaint. And the mean amount of time was only 92 seconds. So I think it's important for providers to kind of step back, allow the patient to fully describe their situation. A second tip that I'd like to offer is for providers to use their body language and their speech to convey to the patient, I'm here and I'm listening. And so what that looks like in practice is facing the patient, you know, avoiding kind of the temptation to type in the computer and be facing the computer screen. Face the patient, make eye contact, and convey understanding while the patient's talking by using verbal cues like, or I understand. And when the patient is done describing their presenting complaint, conveying your understanding of the patient's situation by summarizing the patient's symptoms, their wishes for the visit, and how they're feeling about the situation. Don't shy away from that emotional content because for the patient's experience with their illness, that is key. And when providers acknowledge that emotional content, the patient feels heard and understood.
You know, it's interesting. It seems to me as a physician when I listen best, actually, one, patients are more comfortable telling their history, but equally important, they feel heard. They don't seem to need to keep clarifying things the way that they sometimes do when I'm not at my best, when I'm not listening carefully. You know, the other thought that comes to mind, and tell me if this is useful, is I'll often do a self-check because I think I listen differently when I don't have that many people scheduled and I have plenty of time than I do when I'm three patients behind and I know people are, their time is valuable and I feel pressured. And as I walk in the room, I try to self-check and say, am I being too rushed? You know, I need to listen to this person because I think we always benefit from self-calibration. Is there any utility to that?
Yes, I think that's an excellent point, Neil. And you're absolutely right that a systemic challenge that we all face, both as being on the patient side and the provider side, is we only get 15 minutes with one another on average. And in that time, we've got a lot of problems to solve. We've got a lot of solutions to formulate. And so both sides are feeling time crunched. And so you're absolutely right. If we can both kind of self-check, center ourselves, and come into the clinic setting and into the exam room, sort of with our minds clear and our focus on the patient, I do think listening will be more effective under those conditions.
Visit us at www.thrombosis.org for more information on blood clots and related conditions. To leave feedback or suggestions for future topics, please call our podcast hotline at 617-340-9842. Before we go on and talk about what patients can do, Brenda, I want to ask you, when we talk about mindful listening that Kimberly is recommending we do as clinicians, you as a patient, do you think you can tell when the doctor or nurse practitioner or PA is really listening to you or not? Can you tell?
Oh, absolutely. There's a lot of body language that gives away a lot of subtle clues where they're constantly looking at their watch or they kind of glancing at other things. You can tell right off the bat, you're just talking and the only one listening is the wall.
I am so glad you answered that way. I wasn't sure which way that was going to go, but I was fairly confident you could tell. And it's true, we all can. Now, Kim, if you can talk a little bit about things don't always go as planned. Doctors at times are rushed and they walk in the room and they're not fully listening. And as Brenda just said, the patient can tell. What do you recommend for patients to do when they feel they're not being heard, or even before that, to facilitate being heard?
Yeah, these are excellent questions. So I would say one important tip, we talked previously about the fact that there's a time crunch going on that puts pressure on both sides during the meeting for both sides to get their needs met. And so I think it's especially useful for patients to think ahead of time, what are the key issues I want to make sure are addressed during the visit? And really whittling those things down to a maximum of three issues that you really want to talk about. And then thinking about what are the essential details that I need to convey to my provider and what are the details I can leave behind? Because realizing that your provider is feeling the time crunch and really wanting to hear you and understand your situation, but needs to do that efficiently. So working collaboratively with the provider to use the time together wisely. And when your wishes are conveyed and you set the agenda, you come into the room, you tell your provider, okay, here's the things I want to talk about. If during that time you feel the conversation veering off topic, it's perfectly reasonable and appropriate for patients to kind of get it back on track in a kind but firm way to say, Dr. Jones, I really wanted to make sure we have time to talk about such and such. Can we make sure that we have time for that? And finally, if at the end of the visit, if patients feel like all of their important agenda items are not covered, I think it's appropriate to say, hey, I didn't get this question answered. How should we address that issue?
That's so helpful. And Brenda, you are the expert from the patient's point of view. Any tips you have for organizing communication as a patient?
Typically, I think in advance of my appointment, I will make a list It's important with that list to consider what is the really big issue that you want to walk out with, knowing it's been discussed and hopefully addressed, versus just having a list and just kind of starting and not getting that important piece. So you want to make sure that's on the top of the list. And then you go down. Don't make a huge list because you are on a time constraint. And these providers, you know, some of them have 2 minutes, others have 5-10 minutes. So you need to make that list and you need to make it work for you and the provider. Don't save the serious things as they're walking out the door.
Wow. Thank you for sharing that with all of the people listening who will be coming in as patients, because I can tell you from my point of view, it's so helpful when I know what is a priority for a patient rather than a long list of symptoms or a long list of things that I then address the things that are less important to them because I might focus on them. So agenda setting is so important. I'll share, as I reflect on our discussion, something that I hesitate to say because it's such a not well-known hint, but I'll share it. For patients to remember that their doctors are people too, and sometimes just a little word of kindness changes the mood in the room. So saying to your doctor, boy, it looks, if this is true, boy, it looks like things have been busy today. Are you doing okay? And it's amazing when someone cares about you, it brings out the care that you have for them. Because ultimately, doctors, patients, we're all people and we all do. And the reason we as clinicians are here is because we really do want to give the best care. This was a fantastic discussion. Brenda, Kim, thank you so much for joining us. We only have a minute or so left. Kim, are there any last thoughts? If there's one important learning point that you'd like people to leave with, what would that be?
One important idea that I'd like to leave all of us with is when provider-patient communication works well, there's lots of good things that happen. And the research literature is full of outcome studies that show that when those interactions work well, we see better outcomes. We see better patient adherence to treatment. We see patients getting better. We see lots of positive things. So when we can come together collaboratively and work as a team towards patient care, both providers and patients benefit from that.
Fantastic. And Brenda, any important single point that rises to the top that you'd like to leave our listeners with?
Well, Neil, you did bring up that the providers are human, just like we are, and that they have things in their life, and that you have to remember that you're there to ask for help, but you also have to remember that they also have things going on in their lives. So asking them how they're doing is actually a wonderful thing, and I do it myself. So I think it does help with the communication, and it does make it a little bit easier for both parties.
Fantastic. Again, Kim, Brenda, thank you so much for joining us. We've covered a lot of ground today. We've talked about the importance of listening, the critical importance of two-way communication. Brenda, you've shared with us the critical importance of agenda setting and ultimately how it is a collaboration between clinician and patient that helps us all accomplish our goals, which is for patients who come looking for care to get the best care possible. This is your host, Dr. Neil Skolnick. Thank you for joining our conversation today on ClotCast, the North American Thrombosis Forum's podcast series. We want to thank Janssen Pharmaceuticals and AstraZeneca for their generous grant support of this podcast. And we invite you to continue the conversation by checking out the resources and events at thrombosis.org. Thanks again, and we look forward to seeing you next time.